Good evening, folks. My name is Ahmed. I'm an alcoholic. I have a sobriety date. It is March 15, 2016. I have a sponsor. His name is Mike, and I call him every day. He's a gentleman that's taken me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a home group, which is the Midtown group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet every Sunday at 7:30, and it's a celebration meeting. So, we have two celebrants that celebrate every week. And it's amazing because, you get to see AA working in people's lives. It's not a celebration of the people. It's a celebration of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I always try to, remember that, because I remember when my sponsor, he was celebrating one time and he was like, you know why we do this, right? And I was like, yeah, because you got another year. And he explained to me, he was like, no, this is to show AA works. And, this is many different examples of me getting direction from my sponsor and listening to him, Sam, I do want to thank you for asking me to come out. It's a pleasure, man, to come out and do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous and just show up. Before I got sober, I was incapable of that, I would say I would be places, tell people, I'd make plans with them and never show up. So, living a different life, having these principles in my life today, I'm able to show up. I say where I'm going to be, and I do what I'm going, to say. And it's really great to be here. Came right here with my buddy Spencer, my roommate, my friend who rode down with me, and it was a great ride down here, man. And just seeing the beautiful sunset coming in, towards the end was just, it was amazing, man. So really grateful to be here, grateful to be sober. Really, what's going on is, I'm just giving back what was so freely given to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. This thing was given to me freely, and for me to keep it, I have to give it away. I have to share my strength and experience and hope with the next alcoholic, and that's what I'm here to do. So in a general way, I'll tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. Currently, I do sponsor men in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have four sponsees who are currently active. One is in rehab, two are currently active, and one was, went out drinking, and, he called me the other night, and, he said he wanted to come back, and he was tired, and, I told him he has to get to a meeting, call me tomorrow when you're sober, and in sponsorship, what I've learned is, all I can do is be an example, be an example to the next guy. And with that is, sharing my experience, strength, and hope. And if I don't have that experience, guide them to somebody else that does. I grew up, I come from a family, my mom and dad, were married. They were married for over 50 years till my dad passed away. So they didn't drink. There was no alcohol in the house. They were religious people, respectful. And, afforded me a great life, I have an older brother who's 9 years older than me. I have a sister who's 8 years older than me. And then I have another sister who's 6 years older than me. And then my parents took a break, and then I came. So it's like, growing up, you're kind of like, okay, was I, meant to be? Was I planned? What was the break about, And, and, in doing so, I had a little, apprehensions, growing up, because I didn't really relate to my brothers and my sisters, My brother was always in private school, he was in boarding school, so he didn't really live with us. So I didn't really get to develop a relationship with my siblings, I spent a lot of time as a kid by myself, watching TV and fantasizing, And earliest memories I can remember about alcohol was, I'd watch movies like Western movies, old John Wayne movies, and I was always admired by the alcoholics in the movie, the drunks, and, I started getting fascinated with, alcohol, and, I started to emulate them, instead of playing cops and robbers, play Indians and cowboys, and I'd act like the town drunk, and, I'd pour a little Coke in a little glass and drink it and, pretend that it was like alcohol, and this is like, I'm like 6, 7 years old on this, and my experience of alcohol growing up as a kid, I had uncles who were alcoholics. So, you know, I saw that firsthand, you know. You know, our uncle used to call us, you know, come to our house, you know, drunk, you know, knock on the door. And you know, I didn't fully understand it, you know. But, you know, what I did say was I would never be like that, you know. I was like, man, I'm never going to be like this guy, you know. I'm never going to drink, you know. Alcohol is not good, you know. I don't want any parts of it. And my sister was also an alcoholic, one of us, you know, growing up, you know, in high school. She'd go to parties and come home from the parties and, you know, she'd be drunk. And my mom would, like, put her in the shower and run cold water on her. And you know, and I saw this stuff, man. And I was just like, nah, man, I'm never going to drink, dude. This is, you know, I see this firsthand. You know, I will never have a drink. And obviously that wasn't the case. So, you know, growing up, you know, as a kid, you know, I grew up in Silver Spring, Maryland. And, you know, when I got to junior high, that was kind of like the changing of, you know, life, you know. You had different groups, you know. You had the jocks, you know, you had the nerds, you know, you had the athletes, you know. You had the trouble kids, you know. And, you know, I just did not know exactly where to fit in, you know. I didn't know which group to be a part of, and I didn't know, because I was incapable of developing relationships with people, you know. And so me and my buddy, so I started really just running out with the bad kids, you know. At a young age, you know, I started going to 7-Eleven in the morning before school and, you know, stealing candy. And then I'd go to school and I'd sell the candy, you know. And I had like a little knapsack, and, you know, I would put like a bunch of blow pops and bubble gum in it and sell it for like 50 cents a piece. And in sports, you know, I played sports, but, you know, I wasn't a great athlete. So I wasn't getting the attention that I wanted and, you know, that I desperately needed. So, you know, and alcohol was not available to me, you know, at that age, you know. I needed some sort of relief, you know. I was irritable, discontent, and, you know, and happy with life, you know. And I just did not know what my solution was going to be, you know. So I started acting out. You know, I became the class clown, you know. I started causing trouble. And, you know, that rush fulfilled that need that I was looking for. So I would literally get kicked out of class every day. My teachers would write me a referral every day, meaning sending me to the principal's office. And this was, you know, a daily occurrence. Because, you know, I got resentful as a kid at my parents. You know, I was the son of a diplomat. And, when we came to the U.S. when we were like 10 years old. Before that, you know, my dad was an ambassador. I lived all around the world. And I was a spoiled kid, you know. I had everything I wanted, and it was never enough, you know. My parents would buy me a toy, I'd want two, you know. They'd buy me a new pair of shoes, I'd want two, you know. No matter what happened, it was never enough. Because I'm an alcoholic. I was self-centered and selfish from the very start, you know, growing up. And, you know, that's just my experience. And then, going to junior high, getting out of junior high, you know, I started high school, and, you know, I was still a troublesome kid, causing trouble, but I did not drink yet. So, you know, 9th and 10th grade, you know, I was making decent grades, you know, I had good friends, and then, that day came, you know, when I had my first drink. And I remember it vividly, you know. I remember it vividly. It was roughly about 22 years ago. And I still remember it. I remember the feelings, you know. I remember feeling produced by alcohol, which I truly loved, you know. I was at a park with a bunch of friends, and we had like 40 ounces of Old English beer. And, you know, OE, so, you know, I drank that, you know, halfway down, you know, something overcame me, which I believe is a spiritual experience, You know, I believe that was my first spiritual experience, and that was my awakening, you know. And, you know, my shoulders kind of dropped. You know, I got a little relaxed. I could see everybody clearly. And all those thoughts, all those of what you thought about me, you know, how you view me, all that went out the window. And I was able to talk and conversate and act in a manner that I have never been able to do so. And I had an aha moment, you know. I was like, why on God's earth did I not do this before? You know? And at that moment, that feeling is what I've been chasing for the next 22 years. That exact moment. You know, I didn't like black out my first time drinking. It was just a great spiritual experience, and I wanted to capture it again. But that never happened, you know. For me, you know, alcohol, you know, it was progressive, but it, you know, I immediately started blacking out, and I immediately started having repercussions for my drinking, you know. Started off with, you know, school, you know, skipping school. You know, I wasn't doing that before. And my trajectory at that point changed, you know. The group of guys I was hanging out with, you know, I stopped hanging out with all my friends. You know, that's where it started first. You know, I started hanging out with a new group of guys. And, you know, we would just skip school, drink. And it was fun. It was fun. There was no consequences, you know. And then, you know, then the blackouts came, you know. And the reason the blackouts came is, you know, we would get like a bottle of liquor, me and my boys, and you know, I would reach for that liquor more often than they would, you know. And I would try to drink as much as I could because I wanted to have the most. I wanted it more than they did, you know. And, I, you know, at that point, you know, I didn't realize, you know, what was going on, you know. I just thought I just wanted to get, you know, messed up. And, you know, that was just a pattern. And, you know, so I started blacking out. And, you know, the next couple of days, you know, the next day, you know, you call your buddy and, you know, they tell you, yeah, man, you know, you blacked out last night. You did this, you did that. And, you know, we'd laugh about it. And, you know, and they'd be like, yeah, man, you did this, you did that. And I'm like, okay. But then, you know, as my drinking progressed, you know, the blackouts, you know, started getting worse, you know. You know, and then people would, you know, stop taking my calls, you know. Or, you know, they wouldn't tell me what happened, you know. And you know, that's when I first started to experience the pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization, you know. You know, waking up that next morning and saying to myself, you know, what the hell did I do? You know, what did I do last night? I don't have a clue. And, you know, I would just feel sick to my gut, and, you know, and I would just feel so bad, but I would just drink again, just to, you know, get rid of it and continue it. And this is how I progressed, you know. So I barely graduated high school, you know. I think the principal just was like, yeah, let's get him out of here, you know. And, you know, my English teacher just barely passed me, so I barely graduated high school. Signed up for junior college, Montgomery College, and you know, I didn't even take any actions. You know, my mom and like my sister's husband, you know, they did all the paperwork and signed all the paperwork for me. All I had to do was go to class, and I had just too much freedom. You know, I was completely on self-will. I didn't have any principles. You know, I didn't have anything to live by, you know. And I come from a good family. You know, my family did attempt to instill principles in me, you know. They did, you know, try to teach me right from wrong, you know, the way to live life. But I did not want to take anybody's directions as a kid. I was not open to suggestions, you know. I was not open to any type of feedback, any type of advice or anything, you know. I was self-will run riot, you know. I was doing what I wanted, when I wanted, and how I wanted, you know. And, you know, this type of manner of living, you know, continuously led me to progress down, you know, the wrong path in life, you know. So, you know, I dropped out of school, started working at the local Giant, you know, working there as a, you know, like a cashier. And, you know, I was like 19, I was still living at home, you know, my family's like, you know, all educated, all, you know, college graduates, and, you know, my parents are telling me, like, dude, you're going to end up in jail, you're going to die. And anytime people would give me advice or suggestions, it would just make me more angrier, you know. It would make me want to act out more and make me want to, you know, do things the opposite way. And so, you know, I was, you know, at that job for a while, but, you know, I'd come in late all the time. You know, I was stealing money out of the register. You know, I was stealing, like, supplies from the grocery store. And, you know, eventually, you know, they were like, you know, you got to go. And, you know, so they ended up firing me. And now, you know, I was jobless, you know, I wasn't really doing much. And, you know, I just continued to drink, you know. Alcohol became my best friend, you know, at a young age. You know, that's all that was the most important thing to me was drinking and getting drunk, you know. I completely alienated all aspects of my life, you know, family-wise, responsibility-wise. You know, if you weren't drinking, if you weren't, you know, involved in drinking, I didn't want anything to do with you, you know. You know, I used to go to, like, a lot of family events, like, you know, weddings and birthday parties. And all that started fizzling out, you know. All that started fizzling out. And the most important thing, you know, was King Alcohol, you know. And you know, they had me in the scripts. And I did not realize it, you know. I thought I was young. I thought I was invincible. I thought, you know, this is what you do as a kid. You know, you drink, you know. You know, I thought that, you know, my view of an alcoholic was those guys, those bums out in the street, those bums in front of the liquor store who I would give money to go into the beer store and buy me beer, you know, and I'd give them a couple of dollars. They'd be out there with their brown paper bags, you know. That's what I thought an alcoholic was. Or somebody who drank before work or, you know, had a vodka in like a water bottle or, you know, stuff like that, you know. I did not relate I did not think I was an alcoholic because I could stop drinking. And I did, you know. I would stop drinking for periods of a time, you know. But every time I stopped, you know, I could not stay stopped, you know. I would stay stopped long enough till the feelings went away, till the pain went away, and, you know. And that's the thing with alcoholics, man. We forget so quickly how we felt just a week ago, you know. And, you know, and I would just go back to drinking. And then the same thing would happen again. You know, the same thing would happen again. So, you know, I started, you know, running around these guys in the neighborhood and started causing real trouble, you know, started causing crimes, you know. Ended up, you know, going out robbing people and, you know, because I wanted to fit in. You know, I wanted to fit in with the guys in the neighborhood. You know, I wanted to look cool, you know. And by me doing this, you know, it made me feel like, you know, I was one of the guys, you know. I wanted to be a tough guy. You know, I wanted to be that badass because I was delusional as a young kid, you know. And, you know, that's what I did. And those repercussions came quick, you know. I got arrested at 19. You know, I was convicted of armed robbery, and you know, and I was sent to Montgomery County Detention Center, you know. And I'll never forget, you know, even when I was getting sentenced, you know, I was still in denial, you know, I was still trying to figure out a way to get out of this and not understanding that the way out of this is to live differently, you know. That was not an option for me. But, you know, my mother was there, my brother was there, you know, my father was there, you know, my family was there, you know, they saw me get cuffed and, you know, the sheriffs took me away and, you know, they cried and, you know, they got to speak in front of the judge and, you know, and I was sitting in that cell, man. I was like, yeah, I can't do this. I can't live like this anymore, you know. This is it. You know, you have to change your life, you know. And so my intention was, you know, to change my life and not drink. So I was sent to what's known as a pre-release center, where you live there and you work. And you know, I started working for my cousin who ran a hotel in D.C. So I was working as a front desk. And you know, while there, I didn't drink. You know, I didn't drink. And you know, we were supposed to go to AA meetings, and you know, I was supposed to do all this other stuff. And you know, I went to the AA meetings. You know, I would drop my slip in the box. I'd go outside, smoke some cigarettes, come back at the end of the meeting, and pick up my slip and leave. You know, I relayed it out immediately because I did not think I was an alcoholic. You know, and you know, come to find out, you know, I am an alcoholic. You know, and as the book describes it, you know, because you know, when I start to drink, you know, I can't stop drinking. You know, and what happened was, you know, the phenomenon of craving. You know, that first drink for me, it set off the phenomenon of craving. You know, that feeling produced by alcohol, and that's what I love. You know, this is what I've learned since that time. You know, this is what I've learned. And so, you know, so I was there for about 6 months, you know, working that program, and then I got put on house arrest. And, you know, when I got put on house arrest, you know, I had a little more freedom. I had what's known as travel time, where I could, where it'd give me like 2 hours to go to work and 2 hours to come back. And what I would do is, it was a beer store right across the street from our house. So, you know, I was like, you know, I had gone to like AA classes and stuff. So I've learned like, okay, alcohol stays in your system. Like a 12-ounce beer stays in your system for an hour. 4 ounce liquor stays in your system for an hour. So I would go to that beer store and I would say to myself, okay, I'm going to go ahead and drink a beer on my way to work. And then by the time I get home, it'll be out of my system. And at this hotel, you know, they had, you know, I was working at the front desk. So, I had the keys to all the rooms, you know, and with the keys to all the rooms come the keys to all the mini bars, you know? And I would literally go in there every day, go in one of these rooms, open up the mini bar, and just take all the little miniatures. And I would just take them downstairs, put them behind my desk, and I would start to drink. And I would tell myself, all right, you're gonna cut this off by like 5 o'clock, you know, so that, you know, you can sober up and get back in time to, because I had a machine that I would blow into, you know, that would voice recognition and check my breath when I got home. And every day it was a struggle. You know, I'd be like, one more drink, just one more. I can get one more in. And I don't know, man, by the grace of God, you know, somehow I was able to get home sober and blow. But every day it was a struggle. Because, you know, once I started to drink, you know, I can't stop, you know. And I continue to do this, you know, So once I got out of that, you know, I was on probation, you know, I was living at home with my folks, you know, I was like, man, you know, I'm just going to try to continue working, you know, try to better myself. And I was just in complete denial, you know, and what ended up happening was, you know, I was on probation. You know, you got to go to probation, you got to take urines, you know, you got to do community service, you got to do all these things, but I am incapable of taking directions. I am incapable of following the law. I am incapable of doing anything other than what I want to do. And, you know, me doing what I want to do, you know, ended up me, you know, violating that probation, you know. You know, I'd go to my probation officer maybe once a month, then shortly I just stopped going. And it was one night that it was, I think, my 21st or 22nd birthday. A couple of friends had asked me to come out, and you know, they were gonna, you know, take me out to dinner, you know, drinks, all that good stuff. And so, you know, I was gonna take the train down, and you know, I was like, man, it's a little bit of a ride, so you know, I need something to drink. So, you know, I stopped at the beer store, I grabbed me a beer, I drank that beer, and I was getting ready to get on the train, and I was like, it's just not enough. I need another one. You know, I need at least one more before I get down there. So I went back to the beer store, bought that beer, tried to get on the bus with that beer. And that's another thing I used to do, man. You know, as a kid, I used to get on the buses, drink on the buses, drink on the back of the buses. You know, it didn't matter. You know, I drank anywhere at any time. You know, it's, you know, I felt invincible. You know, I felt like I could do what I wanted. But this time the bus driver's like, no, man, you can't get on this bus with this beer. And I was like, okay, cool, I'm going to take the train, you know. So I got on the train, and, you know, in plain sight, you know, it's a full train, you know. I'm just sitting there just drinking my beer, you know, people are looking, and it's like, okay, whatever. And this guy comes stumbling by me, and you know, he looked like he was inebriated, and I was like, okay. And he went and hit the intercom, and he starts walking back towards me, and, you know, he pulls out a badge, and he's like, transit police. And he was like, yeah, man, we were watching you all the way from Silver Spring, and, you know, we decided to pull you over in D.C., you know, just kind of be easy on you. You know, you get a $10 ticket here, you know, send you on your way. As long as you don't have anything pending, you know, you're good to go, right? It's like, and something just overcame me, you know? Something overcame me, and I just started getting this, like, weird feeling. And lo and behold, I was a fugitive from justice, you know? I had violated that probation, you know, from that probation officer who I never went to go see. You know, I was a fugitive from justice, you know, and I'll never forget, man, it turned midnight and they put the cuffs on my hand and it was my 22nd birthday, you know, and they took me over to D.C. jail. And once again, that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization kicked in, you know. You know, I woke up the next day sober, and that's when it kicked in. You know, I felt it. I felt it. I felt the shame. I felt the guilt, you know, and I swore I would never do this again. I said, there's no way I'm going to continue to drink. And so I got shipped back to Maryland. I was out, you know, I was out on bond, and I was back drinking within like a week. You know, just a week ago, I had swore off alcohol. I said I would never do it again, you know. And within a week, I was back to drinking. Those feelings that I felt at that moment had subsided, and I felt like I could drink again. And that would be the continuous, you know, recycling of my story in my life, you know. You know, I would drink, you know. And I would drink, and I would get to a place where I felt like that I could never drink again. I was like, things have gone so bad that I'm not going to drink again. And then I would stop. And then shortly after, I would drink again, and it'd be like, what's going on? And you know, I started, like, you know, working, you know, jobs here and there, and I was working in a collection agency, and you know, just calling people all day and, you know, harassing them for money. And, you know, I got in that job, you know, I used to go there drunk, you know, and, you know, they didn't care, you know, as long as I was bringing them money, you know, as long as I was making money, it was fine. And I was making a lot of money as a young guy. So, you know, I started getting, you know, I got a little older, started getting into the bar scene, you know, stopped kind of running the streets so much. And, you know, what happened was, you know, my whole life when I started drinking was the chase. The reality of what happened was I wanted to drink like other people. I wanted to drink like a normal person. And, you know, coming to realize that's the total delusion, you know. I am not capable of drinking like my fellows, you know. I would, you know, I switched up the brands, you know, because I used to drink like cheap malt liquor. So I switched to drinking like Top Shelf, like Heineken, like expensive vodkas and cognacs and stuff like that. And, you know, it didn't matter. It did not matter what I did. I tried to even change my circumstances, the people I was around, you know. I started hanging out with different groups of people, you know. I started going to different types of bars. I started going to different environments. I tried to do everything I could to drink properly. And what that what that entails was, this was me attempting to control my drinking. And I cannot control my drinking, you know? I cannot control my drinking. My drinking controls me. And, you know, this was just the way I lived, you know? And, you know, I would continue, you know, get in trouble, in and out of jail, those type of things. But, you know, I became so cunning that I was able to, evade, you know, all these, like, arrests and stuff like that, you know, because I kind of became like a, almost like a professional criminal, you know. I was going to court so much that I'd go to court and have like two different charges on the same day, you know. I'd go to this in front of this judge for this one charge at 1 p.m. 3 p.m. I'd go in front of this other judge for this other charge. So it was something always going on, some sort of probation, some sort of judge, you know, something. I was always jumping out the frying pan into the pot, you know, and that's just the way I live, you know. And, you know, this continued for, you know, a very, very, very long time, you know. And you know, but alcohol is progressive, you know. This thing got progressive, you know. You know, first it was fun, and, you know, then it was fun with problems, and it was just straight problems, you know. And what happens is, you know, alcohol stops working, you know. It stopped working for me, you know. And I would just drink more and more to try to get those feelings subsided that I did not want to deal with. I did not want to live, I did not want to deal with life on life's terms for anything, you know. I did not want to face life in any capacity, you know. All I wanted to do was get drunk and have a good time. And if I couldn't do that, I didn't want anything to do with it, you know. You know, jobs I couldn't keep, bills couldn't get paid, you know. You know, I've got kicked out of my apartment. My car's been repossessed. You know, lost jobs. All within the same time period. But what I would do is, after the destruction of my life, I would build my life back up. You know, it's like that, like House of Cards. It just falls, and then you build it back up. And then in doing that, this time I swore it would be different. Because I knew what happened in that last experience. I knew what I did wrong last time. So knowing that information, this time is going to be different, you know. But it's not. It always ends up the same. And the reason that is because when I put alcohol in my system, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what the end result is going to be. But I always thought that I did know what the end result was going to be. I thought I could control my drinking. And, you know, I did not want to come to grips with the fact that I was an alcoholic. I did not want to admit that I was powerless over anything, you know. And that's why I continue to drink, you know. I went to my first rehab when I was, like, 19 years old. And they were talking about, I like alcohol as a disease and, you know, and all this other type stuff. And I was just like, well, you know, these people are older than me. You know, I don't relate. So I immediately related out, you know. And I immediately related out. And, you know, I didn't want anything to do with it. So what ended up happening is, you know, my family ended up really getting tired of me, you know, because what I would do is I would move out, you know, I'd get a job, you know, move in with, you know, some female, have some sort of little life going, that would hit the fan, and, you know, I'd come back running home to the family, you know, and, you know, they would always take me in. So, you know, and this was just a continuous pattern for me. It was enabling, you know, and I used the enabling and I milked it for everything that, you know, I could. But then, you know, my family got tired of it. You know, they got tired of it, and they had hit a bottom themselves where they were like, you know, we can't continue to enable you. So my mom put me out, and you know, and I went back to rehab, and I was like, all right, this time I'm going to do it. I'm going to get sober. I don't really have anything else going for me, you know. I'm going to try to get some sort of aftercare. I mean, I'm going to really try to get after this thing. Within a week there, I got into a fight, and I got kicked out, you know. And before I went into that rehab, you know, I went outside in the, you know, in the bushes, and I drank like 240s. I popped some things, and you know, and just got screwed up right before I went in there. And you know, that kind of last hurrah, you know. There's always that's another thing. I always had a last hurrah like a million times, you know. You know, this is the last hurrah, you know. And then, next thing I know, years have gone by, you know. And so I got kicked out of the rehab, man. And I'm standing in the hallway. This lady comes and gives me my discharge papers, and I'm like, where the hell do I go? You know, because my family put me out. I have nowhere to go. She just gave me like a referral to like a crisis center, you know, and shelter. So, you know, I've never been through this, you know. So, you know, that's where I went, you know. I went to the men's shelter, and, you know, they would, it was overpopulated, so it was like an overflow. So they would, like, put us on a bus, take us to, like, a school, give us, like, a mat to sleep on, and in the morning wake you up, and, you know, give you a bus token and drop you off at the bus stop. And, you know, and that was your day, you know, and then you had to go figure out what the hell you were going to do for the day. And, you know, so I'd ride around the bus, you know, I'd go to Giant, I'd steal some food, you know, maybe I'd go to the library, you know, and then, you know, at night sometimes, you know, if I didn't want to go there, you know, I'd go sleep in the building, you know. And as an alcoholic, you know, no matter how low I got, I've somehow sought some sort of comfort in it, you know. I'm sleeping in a building, and I'm telling myself, it's okay, because this building has heat, it has carpet, you know, and I'm justifying my conditions, you know. And this was a constant thing. It was like, no matter how low in the spectrum I got, I was always seeking some sort of comfort in it. And what ended up happening is, so my grandmother ended up being sick. So they let me come back. The family let me come back. My aunt allowed me to stay with her so they could sober me up, you know, so I could, you know, she was on her deathbed, you know, so I could make her funeral and stuff like that. And I was at my aunt's house, and, you know, within like 3 or 4 days, you know, I went back out drinking, you know. I was like, I'm going to go hang out with some friends. I went out, and I came home in a blackout. And my aunt said, you got to go. So she kicked me out. And I missed my grandmother's funeral, you know. The rest of the family was there. You know, people flew from, you know, all over. Everybody was there except for me, you know. And I could not even stay sober enough to make it to my grandmother's funeral. That's how selfish of a human being I was, you know. You know, I did not care. And so, you know, that cycle continued, you know, and then And then, you know, they had, like, another intervention for me. My brother came down. And, you know, at this point, you know, my dad had terminal cancer. And you know, I was in, like, total denial about it, you know, because I was just active in my alcoholism. You know, I didn't care, you know. I did not care. My dad, you know, had terminal cancer. And, you know, it did not, like, register in my brain what was going on, you know. So, you know, I went back to rehab one last time, and this was a moment of clarity for me, you know. In that rehab, what happened was I was there for, like, a couple of days, and I ended up finding some products in my sock, you know, some dry goods in my sock while I was in the rehab, you know. And I was just like, you know, I was like, should I do it real quick? Should I sell it to somebody? Should I flush it? You know, what should I do? You know, and I was like, I'm just going to put it away, and I'll figure it out later. And I walked out of my room, and something overcame, you know. And, you know, I believe that was God, you know, came overcame me and told me to go flush that stuff, you know. And you know, that's what I did. You know, in my whole life, whenever I was met with a decision, you know, I always made the wrong decision, you know. For whatever reason, that day, I made the right decision. Because if I did not take that action, I'm pretty sure I would not be standing here today. You know, so this is a game of inches, you know. It's a game of inches, you know. And, you know, and I got involved, you know. I got involved, and what ended up happening was, you know, I got, you know, guys were bringing meetings, so I started getting their numbers, you know. I started getting them numbers. And, you know, I got out and I got into a halfway house, you know. And it was the first time, you know, that I went to rehab and, I didn't go home. Normally I would just go home and go about my life. You know, today, you know, I did something different, you know. I started calling these guys and, you know, these guys would, you know, when I was at a halfway house, you know, they would come pick me up for meetings, you know. And then, you know, they would tell me, hey, man, you need to get a sponsor, And I'm like, All right, that's what I got to do. And that was the hardest thing I think I probably ever had to do, was asking another man to help me. You know, I had to walk up to this guy. I had to look him in the eye. And I said, you know, will you be my sponsor? And that was the hardest thing that I've ever done. And I've done a lot of things, you know. And because it was admitting that I needed help. It was admitting that I needed help. And it was the first time that I was willing to ask for help, you know, because I'm such a proud and selfish, you know, all my defects, you know, coming in, you know. And that guy picked me up, man. He picked me up like the next day and we started reading the book, you know. So we went through first, second step and the third step, you know, and we read. And, you know, and then he had me do a four step shortly after, you know, and and I sat on it for a little while because I thought I was different. I thought I could, you know, I thought I could figure this thing out on my own. I thought that I could do AA different. The solution in this book is one way. That's it. You know, there's no deviating from the solution. There's no different way to do it, you know. You know, it's outlined in the book. And while I was here in AA, I thought that I could somehow change it to fit me, you know, and that's what I did. But then, you know, I went ahead, you know, and I did a fifth step, and I did an honest fifth step, you know, and I told this guy things that, you know, that I was going to take to the grave, you know, things that I was, you know, that I was ashamed of, you know, things that I thought I could never share with another human being. And I had the faith to do this. You know, I've only known him for a couple of months, you know. I was like, you know, how am I going to share all my secrets, everything I've done, some guy that I barely know, you know. How am I going to do this, you know. It was a leap of faith, you know. It was a leap of faith, you know. And in doing so, as the book describes, the compulsion to drink was removed from me, you know. The compulsion to drink was removed from me, and I was able to move forward, you know, with the rest of the steps, you know. And, you know, 6 and 7, you know, was really about humility for me, you know, becoming humble, you know. And that's still a work in progress, you know. And then, you know, I had to write a, you know, he asked me to write an 8th step, you know. And I almost went out on the 8th and 9th step, you know. I almost went out on 4 and 5, almost went out on 8 and 9. Because I did not want to take the actions here, you know. I did not want to take the actions that, you know, that we need to take here in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. So, you know, I just started getting involved in the program, you know. I started doing service, you know, coffee cleanup, picking up chairs, you know, having no idea how this is supposed to change my life, you know. How the hell is picking up chairs and cleaning up coffee and shaking people's hands, and how is this going to stop me from drinking? How is this going to alleviate my feelings that I feel every day that I'm miserable, you know? And, you know, what slowly started to happen is my thinking started to change, you know? My perception started to change. The way I viewed the world, the way I reacted to people and situations started to change, you know? And it's called having that spiritual awakening, you know? And I started to have that spiritual awakening, you know? And you know, since that time, you know, I've not had the need to drink, you know. You know, my father passed away when I was 2 months sober, you know, 2 months sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was the people of Alcoholics Anonymous that told me to show up, you know, and put enough pride and made me feel wholesome enough to where I was able to be there for my father at the end, you know. I was there with him every day, you know. I was there helping clean him, helping feed him, you know. So, you know, my dad got to leave this world seeing me sober, you know. And I've been able to maintain that sobriety, you know. I buried him and I put him in the ground, you know. And having done all that, the closest time I ever came to relapsing was the day that I buried my father, you know. Because my mind told me, you did such a good job, you deserve a drink. It's okay for you to drink. You know, you've showed up for your family the last couple of months. You've been sober. You've been doing everything that you need to do. It's okay for you to take a drink. That's what my mind told me. And I did what I was trained to do here. I called my sponsor, you know. And I said, if he doesn't pick up, I'm going to go drink. And he picked up on the first ring. Another true story. Picked up on the first ring. He never does that. So, you know, and, you know, and I told him, you know, I told him, I said, this is what happened and this is what's going on. And he said, yes, that's, you're an alcoholic. You're going to have those thoughts. But you didn't take that drink. You didn't take that action. You did the right action by calling me. And that's what I've learned, man. I've learned, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, man, you take these actions despite of how you're feeling, you know. Because if I lived on my feelings, I'd be home right now, asleep under my covers, and that's it, you know. I don't want to show up for life, you know. And the only way I've been able to do that is because I have a relationship today. I have a relationship with something that's stronger than me, you know, which I call God, you know. And, you know, I take these daily actions, you know. I wake up in the morning and I pray, you know. And I pray God to guide my thinking, my intuition, my decision making, you know. And it helped me go through the day. And, you know, and when I'm agitated, you know, I pause, you know, and I say that will be done, you know. This is the type of life I live today. And this is what's been afforded to me through Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, before I get in trouble, something goes wrong, I go drink. Anything, somebody looks at me funny, somebody says something wrong, I go drink. You know, I had no capability to live life and deal with circumstances without drinking. That was my love with alcohol. You know, that was my relation with alcohol. Because I never wanted to face life on life's terms, you know. And, you know, I'm an alcoholic, you know, as the book describes it. You know, I'm self-centered to the core. You know, I've ruined all types of relationships with my family, employers, everybody, you know. The wreckage that I have laid out is immense. And, you know, and going through the amends process, you know, my mother trusts me today. She calls me. You know, I call her. My brother calls me. My sister calls me. My nephews call me. I have a relationship with my family that I thought could never be restored, you know. I just never thought it was capable. I never thought I was capable of having true relationships and feelings, you know. It's unbelievable. It's an unbelievable life that I have today. And, you know, it's all done through Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And, you know, today, I take a meeting in, you know, every week. To Avery Road Treatment Center. That's the rehab that I've been in and out of 5 or 6 times, you know. And today I get to go in there and bring back what was so freely given to me, you know. And strangely enough, my sister's in there now, you know. That alcoholic sister that I told you guys about, she's in there now. And, you know, we don't, you know, have much of a relationship. But, you know, I'm there, you know, I'm there every day. And, you know, if she, hopefully, you know, she'll want to get involved. And, you know, all I can do is be available, you know. There's nothing else I can do besides being available. And, you know, even though I'm sober today, you know, I have struggles. But, you know, I also have the solution, you know. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous and the steps have been my solution, you know, to everything that I go through, you know. You know, I reach out to the newcomers, you know. Every meeting I go to, you know, I try to find a newcomer, get their number, call them the next day, make a plan with them. You know, this is what was done for me, you know. If guys did not come pick me up for meetings, I would not be here, you know. If I did not have that newcomer experience the people in Alcoholics Anonymous were trained to do, I would not be here, you know. Because I would not take it upon myself to come to an AA meeting and get involved. People called me and said, "How are you doing today?" They said, "I'm calling you just to see how you're doing." You know, and I've never had that before. I've never had any. None of my friends ever called me and said, "Hey, man, what's up, buddy? I'm just calling to see how you're doing today." I've never had that experience until I got sober, and this is the experience that I've had in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and you know this life is so much better than the life that I lived. You know, I get to live two lives. You know, I get to live two lives. You know, and you know. As long as I, you know, take the actions here, you know, I will continue to have, you know, a good life, you know. And you know, what are these actions? Calling my sponsor every day, getting to a meeting, reaching out to the newcomer, calling my sponsees, doing service, you know. It's a daily reprieve that I have to take, you know. And with this daily reprieve, I get this relief, you know. Today, I get the feeling produced by alcohol, but sober, you know, by helping out another human being, you know. I get that feeling inside me that I used to get when I used to drink, you know, and I get that in sobriety, you know. And, you know, it's something that's just amazing, and you know, and I would not trade it for the world. So with that, again, my name is Ahmed. Thank you for your time.
All right.